The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
Well, to celebrate the week of St. Paddy's Day, I want to invite just a delightful gentleman, Jack Cavanaugh, who's a great ambassador for all things Irish. He's got a new book from National Geographic called Always Ireland, an insider's tour of the Emerald Isle. And he's also a leader on some of the National Geographic excursions to Ireland. So let me start with that, Jack, if I can. If someone was to take one of these National Geographic excursions to Ireland, what would they encounter?
Well, it's a little bit of everything Irish. We start in Dublin. We bring people to the museums of Dublin. There's two very interesting places we bring them in Dublin. First of all, the first thing we do when they're off the planes, we bring them to see dead bodies. Believe it or not, off the dead bodies. It's like, welcome to Ireland. Here's our dead. You know, the Irish have a dark sense of humour, particularly in Dublin. But what it is, it's these bodies that were preserved in the bogs for thousands of years. They're from the Bronze Age, and we think they were sacrificed. But it's in the National Museum of Archaeology, and it's absolutely fascinating. It's a brilliant. A brilliant piece of history. I like to read a bit of poetry to the guests on the tour, and Seamus Heaney has beautiful poems about these bog bodies, so I read them a bit of that. Your listeners can look them up. And then the other place in Dublin is a little James Joyce museum, which is called Sweeney's Pharmacy. And Sweeney's was a scene from the book Ulysses, the hero.
Yes.
Leopold Bloom goes in to buy a bar of lemon soap for his wife. So this has now been preserved as a James Joyce museum. The museum is a bit formal. It's a big room where they read. It's a pharmacy. But they do readings. They have PJ gives a song or two on the guitar. And it's a lovely introduction to literary Ireland. And then we take them down to Kilkenny, which is a medieval town, absolutely gorgeous place. We take them to the Ring of Kerry, out to the Dingle Peninsula, up the coast to Clare, to Galway, fabulous city, and we end up at a place called Ashford Castle, which is just out of this world, one of the great castles of Ireland.
Okay, I have like a couple of questions, but first, can we circle back to the bodies found in the bogs? Because that's fascinating. I never heard about that before. When were the bodies found, and what state of preservation were they in?
Well, they've been found all across Europe in bogs, because bogs are, you know, perfect freezers for bodies because of the lack of oxygen, so that they don't decay. Now, they don't decay as quickly, obviously, as others, but there is a certain amount of decay. But it's basically you get the skin in a kind of leather state. The hair is almost perfect. Some of the hair on these people, it looks like a wig, you know, like a red wig. But a lot of the bodies are decapitated or sliced, or some a lot of them obviously been found in bogs would have come amiss off a bog cutting machine, you know, so some of them were sliced in half, unfortunately, but they're in remarkable condition. And they were found, I think several of them were found in the 60s, 70s when Ireland's bogs were being churned up for fuel. But they, as I say, they go back to the Bronze Age, and they think that a lot of them were sacrificed. You know, they were. It's called the Kingship and Sacrifice Exhibition at the National Museum of Archaeology in Dublin. That's the official title of it, but, you know, everyone calls them the bog bodies.
That is fascinating. I've never heard of that before. And, like, what an interesting way to start the tour of Ireland. It's really quite amazing. And then if we can also, I want to circle back to something that you mentioned here about Ireland's stunning castles. And one of the most, you know, the most amazing ones is at the end of the tour. Can you give me just a quick thumbnail of history about, you know, who was living in these castles, and, you know, were they kings, and what time period were these castles from?
Sure. Well, Ashford is one of the great ones because it's kind of like a plotted history of Ireland, if you like, because it was built in 1241 by the Normans down there, and the De Burkas, who came, they were Anglo-Normans, came over to colonize Ireland. They were terrified of all the wild tribes of Galway attacking them, so they built this stronghold in a place called Cong in County Galway on the Mayo border. So that was the original Ashford Castle, to keep out the wild O'Flahertys and all these people who were attacking them. And, of course, it spread then. The Normans famously became more Irish than the Irish themselves. They were assimilated, like all cultures are, into Ireland. So it goes right the way through the 1600s. then during the penal times, the penal laws came into Ireland where the Irish language and everything was suppressed. And then it was sold to the Guinnesses. The Guinness family owned it during the 1800s, and it became a hunting lodge. And they would have hunting parties for the weekend of people over from London, including the Prince of Wales, the famous royal visit. And it was then sold in the 1930s, and then the state bought it, I think, for a while. It's now a 5-star hotel, which is the reason we stay there, but it's absolutely fascinating. And one of the lovely things about staying there is that the whole estate, it's got a large estate on which you've got some of the best trout and salmon fishing in Europe. You've got fabulous horse riding through all this beautiful countryside. There's archery, there's shooting. And one of the things that I did, which was fantastic there, was falconry. I don't know if you've ever... You've probably done a bit of falconry with a name like Hawkeye.
I've always, you know what, as odd as that sounds, I've always wanted to try that, and I'm fascinated by it. There's not a lot of places that still do that. One of them is the Air Force Academy has a falconeer on there, but you don't see it very often.
Flight. Yeah, it's fantastic. You should do it. If you ever get a chance, just do it, because I'll always remember the sheer adrenaline rush off this wild, big, big wild bird, I think it was a hawk, just walloping into my arm, you know?
Yeah.
And you can really feel that that's a wild creature and that he wants that chicken in your But it's just one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences. Lovely, lovely place to stay, Ashford Castle.
Well, you answered a question also that I wasn't actually planning to ask, but I've always kind of wondered what happened to the Irish language. I mean, you know, people there speak English now, but yeah, what happened to the language? Because you see, you know, terms like Éireann go bra.
Yeah.
And there was a language. So it was outlawed. I didn't realize that.
It was. And it was also, it's still spoken, widely spoken in the west of Ireland. We have places called the Gaeltacht, which is a Gaelic speaking region. So a lot of people will speak it still. And it's not a dead language by any means yet. Like Gaelic Manx in the Isle of Man is, unfortunately, now, but our Scots Gael has less speakers, you know. But the Irish language is quite strong now, but it did kind of go underground because we were colonized, obviously, for 800 years, so the language of officialdom was English, and because people wanted to get on, they encouraged their kids to speak English. During hard times, you know, a lot of people would emigrate, so you'd need English to go abroad, but the Irish language is alive and kicking, and you'll see it if you go on tours of the west of Ireland. You'll see it in particular. You'll hear it rather. It's got its own radio station, TV station, etc. And interestingly, one of the great things about the internet age, the digital age, is that it's a lot easier to speak these languages. Because, you know, if you were an Aran Islander, for example, who left in the 1840s, that's it. You'd never speak Irish again because you'd be working, you know, over in America or England or whatever. But now, you know, you're probably talking to your mum and dad and your brothers and sisters, you know, Os Gaeilge in Gaelic, every day of the week on Zoom or whatever.
So yeah.
Kind of an interesting twist that, you know, modernity has its good points as well.
Yeah, it's made the world smaller and made us able to connect a lot better. Speaking of that, and I'm always fascinated by this history, and you've actually touched on this one area in New York City that has one of the most amazing monuments in the city of New York.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, the Hunger Monument, and it feels like you're actually like walking through Ireland when you go into this monument, which is on the Lower West Side of Manhattan. But the story of why so many Irish and why we have such a strong Irish history here in the U.S. came here is really fascinating to me. Can you kind of touch on that a little bit, what happened?
Right. And what you're referring to is this cottage that was donated by a family in Mayo, and it's in Lower Manhattan. It's underneath the Freedom Tower, actually. It's right underneath it, which is amazing. You know, you'd be, at one moment you'd be in a West of Ireland college and you just look up and you see, you know, one of the biggest buildings, the biggest building in New York, right beside it. But a lot of the heavy emigration, of course, started in famine times in the 1840s. The famine hit Ireland, and people just had to leave. They didn't have enough food to eat. And with the penal laws that I mentioned before, there just wasn't work on these large estates for a lot of Irish people. So it became a tradition to go abroad, to go to England to work, to go to America to work, to go to Australia to work. And it's one of the stories that I try and tell in the book, Hawkeye, is the Irish abroad, you know, because it's an untold story. Like, a lot of people know the story of Ireland itself, but what the Irish effect on the world outside it was huge as well. So we have a recurring sidebar in the book on the Irish in exile, the Irish abroad. So we've got the Irish in America, the Irish in Africa, the Irish in Europe, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a funny story about that. I was working in D.C. a few years ago, and I was waiting at a bus stop after work, and I think I was reading a book by Colm Tobin, and I felt this presence lurking over my shoulder to see what the book was, you know. And it was a man who was very interested in what I was reading. We struck up a conversation, and next thing he's kind of peppering me about, you know, Ireland with very pointed and good questions about Ireland. And one of them was... He said, so how big is Ireland? How many people live there? And I said, I think at the time it was 4.5. It's now 5.4, I believe. But I said, that's 4.5 at the last count. And he looked at me and he said, 4.5 million people? He said, geez, for 4.5 million people, you make an awful racket. And what he meant, of course, was, you know, culturally, and we punch above our weight culturally. So I tried to include that in the book as well, you know, the Irish imprint in the world of culture, literature and song, music. You know, we went abroad, we brought our fiddles and our barons. And that's another story, the kind of circular nature of Irish music, which became stuff like bluegrass and country music. And it comes home, it comes full circle. Then, you know, you get people bringing it back to Ireland, like Johnny Cash came to Ireland in 1958 and wrote the instant Irish classic, The 40 Shades of Green.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people, even in Ireland, thought that was a classic Irish song, you know?
How funny. That is funny. But you know what? You make a point there that, yeah, I mean, culturally here in the U.S., the Irish, their stamp is all over American culture.
Yeah, it's big. But it's interesting, you know, something that we probably take for granted back home. I'll tell you another funny story, actually, and it touches on this kind of the circular nature, as I was saying, of Irish music and where it went and what it became. Well, I'll tell you two stories. The Chieftains leader, Paddy Maloney, he came to Nashville, I think probably in the 70s for the first time, but he said, it was interesting, he said, I instantly felt I was in part of Ireland, you know, because country and western was so steeped in Irish culture. It was so familiar to him, you know, and the music he'd grown up with. Now, that would come from Scots-Irish in the north as well, as the Irish who, you know, as I said, brought over fiddles and that, and the music evolved. But the other story I like about music is in 1984, I was at a concert in Slane Castle, which is this another one of Ireland's fabulous castles in County Meath. They have a huge rock concert every year, and the guest that year was, the headline that year was Bob Dylan. But we subsequently learned, of course, that Bob Dylan spent the day playing chess with this young rock singer from Dublin. He was in one of the hundreds of bands at the time who were trying to make it big. So he's chatting away with this young rock singer, and they're playing chess, of all things, in the castle, and Bob Dylan has his guitar to hand, which he's tuning up for the concert, and he says, you know, do you know this song? Do you know that song? And he's quoting Irish songs that he's learned growing up, or in New York, I suppose. And the young rock singer is clueless. He said, no, I don't know that. And he's embarrassed, and he's so embarrassed that he doesn't know his own music that he goes away and learns them all, you know, from his day with Bob Dylan, you know. And the kicker in that story, Hawkeye, is that it was Bono.
I knew Bono, that was where this story was going. I was going, this is going to end with this Bono from U2. I knew it was going to go there. It's an awesome story. But that is an awesome story. Well, before I let you go.
Yeah,
that's an awesome story. Well, before I let you go, the book is called Always Ireland, An Insider's Tour of the Emerald Isle. And it's a wonderful book if you've ever wanted to go to Ireland. I know so many people, you know, from the U.S. that really want to travel there. Can you just give us, like, maybe the top three things that you really should see when you go to Ireland if you can make it there?
I'd say go to Kerry, because Kerry is the kingdom, as I say. It's such a beautiful country, very dramatic country. Go to the town of Dingle. You'll hear fabulous traditional music. There's great pubs. There's great food there. It's just a magical place, really, really beautiful. Dingle, County Kerry. I would say go to Galway as well to see the real Irish. There's a very kind of Irish way of life in Galway, an Irish take on life in Galway, philosophy, if you like. As I said, it's in the Gaeltacht, the Irish-speaking place. And the third thing I would recommend, it's not a place, but it's kind of like the state of mind of Ireland, which I think is the big attraction of Ireland. And it's the people of Ireland. Just wherever you are, just talk to the people, you know, because Irish people love to talk, as you know. You know, you can engage them. Probably the best place is a pub to engage Irish people. But they're very good company, and they're very interested in the outside world because we've been out in it so long, you know.
Yeah.
But don't miss out on that. Like, don't go to Ireland and just rush around all these places to mark them off your list. Spend time getting lost. Spend time just talking to people. Spend time in pubs. Go to a horse racing meeting. You'll meet a lot of Irish people in a good mood there. You know, go to a GAA game, which is Gaelic football, our national game.
Yeah.
Meet people, but indulge in the people, you know, have conversations and spend time doing nothing, if you like, you know, because Ireland is a great place for daydreaming, I find.
What a wonderful, wonderful way to conclude this. Thank you so much. What a great conversation.
You've
inspired a lot of people who are listening to this. Like, you know what? I really need to move this up on my bucket list. The book, once again, is called Always Ireland from National Geographic. Jack Kavanaugh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Hawkeye. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. The world is out there, or I should say Ireland is out there. Your adventure awaits.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.